my basketball journey, I would say, didn't obviously start here. It started with not even knowing the sport at all.
Coaches, welcome back to the Talking Split podcast. I am Rob Coulter, as always, joined this week by a couple of guests that we've had on the podcast. So really fortunate this week to have been joined by Matt Cameron from Vic Health, who's leading the Set the Standard campaign that Basketball Victoria have partnered with. And then later on the episode, also joined by Nia Locke. And many of you obviously would have seen Nia, the player, but we get to hear a little bit more about what Nia does behind the scenes, not necessarily just as a player, but also the role that she plays in the community and the work that she'll be doing with Set the Standard in the coaching space in particular. So where this is important, obviously, we all wear a number of different hats in our role in the community and our role in the basketball life. And I'm sure most of the people that listen to this are the coaches. That's where this is obviously pitched at. So where we can, we wanted to try and give as much information around this and as much practical information around this as possible, because a lot of us do come from a lens of naivety and not being aware of some of the tools and the resources that you have available to you out there, but also how we can better engage with our communities and how we can make a more diverse basketball experience for everyone involved with it. So really grateful for both Matt and Nia for giving up their time for this one in particular. So without me talking and rambling on for too much longer, we'll jump straight into Matt and then we'll go from Matt straight to Nia. Hey coaches, thanks very much for jumping back in. We are joined by Matt Cameron from Vic Health today talking about the Set the Standard program. So Matt, thank you very much for jumping in, and Sean, thank you very much for setting this up as well. Matt, can you give us a little bit of an overview on what the Set the Standard campaign is for those that may not be aware of it so far?
No worries. Yeah, thank you, Rob. Thanks for inviting us onto the program. Great to be here. So one of the things that Vic Health has always done is had a big focus on sport and recreation as a means of improving health and well-being. We know that sport can be so beneficial for people in terms of physical health, in terms of movement, in terms of exercise, but also in terms of social connection, mental well-being as well. So Set the Standard is a social marketing campaign that Vic Health launched a couple of months ago now, something we've been working on for a long time, and it's about supporting coaches with tools, resources, advice and support around how they can make their club and also support their teams to be as culturally safe as possible, and in turn ensure that people have a great experience while they're playing, in this case, basketball.
Yeah, and that's, I suppose, the challenge, I think, for a lot of people. Like basketball, I feel like, is a fairly diverse sport. Like we have a lot of people from different cultures, different backgrounds, different beliefs playing, but it could always be more. And that's the scary part, is how much bigger could this grow if we can almost encourage everyone and engage everyone and get everyone involved in the same direction. And that creating cultural safety is a really interesting part of it. I think that probably, like I date back myself to doing 30-something years of coaching now. This was not something I considered when I first started. And to be fair, I was a very naive 14-year-old when I first started, so I had no clue about anything, let alone cultural safety. So what does it look like, and how do you know when you've got it, I suppose, at your club?
Yeah, I think, and you're right, I mean, basketball is one of those sports that we're really proud to work with. We've got a great working relationship, and one of the things that I know Basketball Victoria acknowledged in a media release recently that was put out around Set the Standard is that basketball's diversity is one of the game's great strengths, and the sport also has this responsibility to lead, which is fantastic. What it looks like is really going to be dependent on each club and each circumstance, and we know that there's not necessarily an end point. It's an ongoing process for clubs to think about how they're currently structured, what they currently offer and what they currently do, and ensuring that there's that constant focus and improvement, and ensuring that those people that are currently participating and are having a great, safe, positive, welcoming experience so that we can keep people in sport. But also for new people coming in, we want to ensure that we can offer that great positive experience for people that want to come in and participate in basketball for the first time. One of the things that Set the Standard is really about is small practical actions that clubs can take, which is about making their clubs culturally safer, but also about supporting player well-being as well. Some of those things that a coach can do in particular, we know that coaches play this really crucial, vital role, is through small everyday actions that they could do during the week, during training sessions, but also on game day as well. That can be about prevention of racism, but also about responding to racism when it might occur. things like speaking up when there's harmful language, things like checking in with players throughout the course of the week, things like welcoming new members when they do join the club, and also just making sure that the club is really taking cultural safety and racism as seriously as possible.
Yeah, it's a really alarming statistic, I suppose, that over 56% of people have experienced or witnessed racism in community sport. And this is like the lifeblood of, it feels like, Australian values is community sport. Was it alarming to you that that number was so high when you found out about it?
Vic Health has had a long interest in making sure that sport is a positive place for everybody. And we've got a long history of doing that, really, since the doors opened to Vic Health in the late 80s. That research that was done through some colleagues at Monash Uni absolutely has been crucial in informing Set the Standard. So some of those stats that are really recent, so 2024, the survey was done noting that 30% of people had experienced racism themselves and another 26 had witnessed racism. So absolutely one of those things that you kind of think about in terms of, again, people's current experience, but new people that we want to welcome into sport. And if that's occurring, that's going to lead to people potentially dropping out of sport participation, in this case potentially being lost to basketball or potentially being lost to sport altogether, which from our perspective is potentially going to be detrimental to their health and well-being, again, from a physical health, so exercise, movement and activity, but also from a mental health perspective as well, so social connection and belonging. The other thing that came from those stats is that, yeah, among those that did experience racism, one in five, so 20% did reduce their participation as a result. So at a time that we're really trying to keep people in sport, retention in sport is really crucial. You know, that's a big number.
Yeah, it certainly alarmed me when I saw it. But then I was thinking back through it and it's like, well, I remember coaching an under-14s team. We're going back 15 to 20 years ago now. And there was a player that I had in my team as well that experienced that. And I kind of went into this, I don't know what to do. Like, who do I talk to about this? What do I confront the coach of the other team? Do I confront the tournament organisers? Do I talk to the player directly? And, you know, naive Rob of 20-something years ago went straight to the coach and sort of said, look, this has happened. I'm only taking it on another player's word in that it wasn't the player that had been racially abused that came to me. It was another player that heard it and said, look, this has just happened. And it's like, I don't know what to do here. Is there a little bit of a guide or a process that people can go through that do see or experience this? Because the last thing you want to do is escalate it to the point of tensions flare up and it's a worse experience. But is there a good way to approach this?
Yeah, and I mean, that's really a great example of kind of what Set the Standard is all about, is providing tools, support and advice to community sport coaches in particular. So, and it's a consistent message that we've heard from coaches is, you know, everyone wants to ensure that their club and their team is providing that good, positive, safe experience where incidents don't occur, but also when incidents do occur, that coaches are often those central figures that play a key role in immediate response. So we know that those people in those clubs are passionate about their sport and they're passionate about providing a safe place for participants and they want to make a difference. So the Set the Standard website, which we launched a couple of months ago, is really the place that we would look to direct coaches to at the minute. So that's www.setthestandard.vic.gov.au. On that website, there's a few things that coaches can do. So there's a self-reflection tool that coaches can do. There's other tools and guidance that people can download and use and think about, which supports them for when they're in those situations. And there's also a checklist that people can do to think about what their club or what their team is currently doing, but also to prepare people for when they might be in those situations as well.
Yeah, because there is that element of prevention and cure, obviously. Like, we don't want it to get to that point where we need the website, but you know, to this point we have to educate people and we have to try and find a better environment, I think, for everyone in that sort of space. I think sometimes there are people that don't even realise they are potentially being racist in what they say, how they act towards people, or whatever it is. That coaching checklist, I think, is a really valuable tool for people to go through, because it's not until you go through it you realise, gee, there might be some biases that I'm not actually aware of in how I coach or how I talk to people or those sorts of things. So I think that's a great tool in there for coaches to use.
Yeah, something the research that Monash Uni did that, again, really informed this work that we've done and what people will be able to see on the Set the Standard website is noting that racism can show up in different ways. So it can show up in really overt, loud and obvious ways, such as racist language, abuse from the sidelines. There's also other ways that racism can show up, which is more subtle. And those things in particular are key things that coaches can do. So that's when you think about prevention. How do we ensure that people understand what good positive behaviour and good positive settings look like? Ideally, to prevent racism as much as we can. Going back to that point that racism can not only affect people in terms of their ongoing participation in sport and the benefits that it can provide, but also the impact that racism can have on people's mental health and wellbeing as well.
Yeah, I mean, the example I gave before, that player was a shell of themselves for probably a good week and a half to 2 weeks, I feel like, at that point. And we tried to deal with them at the time and try and get the best possible outcome. But why would anybody just instantly be okay after that type of a situation? So I think that's an important part of it as well, the ongoing, I don't want to say trauma, but it's probably, I don't have a better word for it at this stage, like that ongoing, it's always going to play in people's heads in some capacity. When you play that team again, what does the week look like leading up to that team again? Is this going to be another problem? Is there going to be repercussions? Those sorts of things just start to play on your mind. And it's just the weight that you don't really consider
at the time. Yeah, and this is where, like, we acknowledge that coaches and club leaders have such an important role in their community sporting club, and they're doing everything from supporting the team through the week, running training sessions, preparing the team for game day, working through a whole bunch of other logistics that is involved in running a club. But a key part of supporting club leaders and coaches is giving tools and guidance that can support them and prepare them as best as we can. So it's absolutely true. So you know, some other research found that Victorians experiencing racism are nearly five times more likely to have poorer mental health and wellbeing. And when you think about what VicHealth is trying to do as an organisation, some of our key focuses are mental health, social connection, belonging, and reducing isolation. And sport is one of those fantastic things that provides such an important role in the community. Whether you're a young kid coming through sport for the first time or someone that's played basketball for 20, 30 years and it's one of the key things in someone's life, the ability to participate in a way that they can feel safe and know that people like coaches are going to be there to support them is what we're really all about in terms of Set the Standard.
Yeah, and that power dynamic, I suppose, that coaches do have over their team, it's probably not recognised enough by coaches, in that they are seen as a fairly central figure in a lot of players' lives. Whether they're aware of it or not doesn't really matter, because they are. So it is one of those things where you might be the trusted person that a player goes to and says, look, this happened. And it might not even have been at sport. It might have been, you know, at school or on the street or wherever it might have been. But you might have to have that first conversation with a player that's prepared to open up and say, look, you know, this has happened to me. You know, what should I do now? And all those resources are on the Set the Standard website as to how to talk about this and how to do it in a safe way for players.
Yeah, and like we kind of mentioned before, there's an acknowledgement that clubs and coaches really want to take action, and they also have an important role, and they also have incredible kind of scope in their clubs to create positive change, and many people want to do that. And this is about a way of kind of supporting that. The campaign is really clear that small practical changes can make a big difference. The Set the Standard website, which we launched a couple of weeks ago, again with Basketball Victoria as a key supporter, is about being a place that people can go for that advice. And also one of the things that we're conscious of is identifying and sharing and celebrating examples of good practice as well. So we know that there are sport clubs, basketball associations, basketball coaches out there doing an incredible job and week in, week out providing those positive, safe, welcoming experiences that we're talking about. So something that we're really conscious of is how do we kind of find those and share those so that other coaches, other clubs can see that, learn from it, and also think about what they can do as a result.
Yeah, I really like the idea of sort of like, not quite case studies, but examples of when it goes well, because I think that's a valuable part of it, is that a lot of our volunteer coaches are literally just that. They're volunteer coaches that work jobs, that have family lives, and all of a sudden they lob in on a Tuesday night to coach their under 14 team, and it's like, I didn't think I'd be dealing with potentially this. And there are so many good examples of people that do the right thing and what it can look like and what it can sound like and the impact I think that has on the community as well. That it's, this is just as valuable as teaching kids to shoot layups or dribble a basketball or whatever it is. This, I mean, realistically, more so. Like, we talk about it in coaching all the time. Yes, we want to create good basketballs, but we want to create good people first.
Yeah.
And this is kind of the first step of that. I feel like if we have members of our community, I suppose, as basketball, not being great people, then what do we expect the sport to look like in 20 years' time when everything filters through?
Yeah. And I mean, sport is fundamentally supposed to be fun. So whether it's a coach running a coaching drill, a coach supporting a team on game day, a coach bringing new players into the club, or a coach thinking about what does the environment need to look like and what does a team culture and climate need to look like, you know, a sport being a fun place to be with great people is one of those things that's going to keep people participating. And keeping people participating is good for both sport as an industry, but also keeping people participating is good in, again, ensuring health benefit that comes from people participating in sport as well. I think, again, Basketball Victoria put out a media release the other day that acknowledged support for Set the Standard, and really acknowledging that point around basketball being one of the more diverse sports in the country, and it's something that we need to kind of be able to protect. So there is information on the Basketball Victoria website, I acknowledge, and also on the Basketball Victoria Instagram page that includes both Nick Honey, who's the CEO from Basketball Victoria, and Nia Locke, who we're working with closely as well. And that's just something also to share.
Absolutely. And I can't preach it enough of how much Basketball Victoria supports this. This is the bare minimum. I kind of feel like for coaches as well, like if you can't create a safe environment, we probably don't want you coaching kids. That's the reality of what we're dealing with at the moment. I think it's the bare minimum that our kids should expect when they walk in the door, is that they're going to feel safe, welcomed, a part of something as they move forward, because potentially this will be the only time you coach this player, or this is the only time that player will be in this team. They'll move on to other teams, you'll move on to other teams, but it would be great in 4 years' time if you do end up in the same team for whatever reason, either as a coach or players or whatever it is, that the first thought is not a groan of like, oh, this again, this is not going to be a good experience. So, because of course, what's the result? Player doesn't come back. And it's something we try and tell our coaches quite a lot. We don't really know if you've done a good job or not as a coach until about 2 or 3 years afterwards. And that's, you know, yes, everyone can win games and scoreboards matter and we all understand the win and loss and all that sort of stuff. But we don't really know if your players don't come back. That's usually the first sign of this hasn't been a good experience. And that's challenging. There are so many reasons for kids not to play sport at the moment. Cost being one of them. Yep. Straight off, why give them another reason to not play?
Yeah.
Like if they have a community around them, whether they go to the same school as them, whether they just see each other walking through the shops, whatever it might be, if they have a connection, surely that leads to a better community space for that player.
Yeah. And I mean, yeah, sport can be one of those things that's really crucial in people's lives, and something that people go to both for that fun and enjoyment, but as a place to be themselves. So we want people to be able to kind of go into a sporting club, particularly if they're passionate about that sport, and again, in this case, basketball, and know that they're going to be able to go into that club environment, the basketball stadium, and be themselves. And that's including the culture that they bring to the team and to the club. So we definitely know that coaches and club leaders are doing a lot. They have a lot on their plates. Volunteers, oftentimes poor, and often trying to juggle multiple hats within both the club but also their broader lives. So one of the key reasons that we have aimed to develop Set the Standard in such a way that people can go on the website and access those free resources and tools. That includes self-reflection, but also includes opportunities to look at scripts and templates. But also when club leaders or coaches sign up via the Set the Standard website, they will then receive ongoing education tips from Vic Health through Set the Standard, which again is trying not to overwhelm coaches with too much information all at once. But those constant reminders of these are the things that you can do within your club that will make a difference. And it's that logic that small changes over a period of time will lead to a big change as well.
Yep. And culture is kind of the buzzword of sport anytime you go anywhere. Yep. And, you know, if we look to, say, the All Blacks and the legacy and everything that went through it, everyone talks about culture being such a big piece, but we spend so little time on it and really trying to foster a good culture in sport. And I suppose that's what I'm curious about. How do you go about fostering that culture? In particular, if there's been nothing done previously, where do you come in to start the conversation, I suppose?
Yeah, I think often it's those leaders within the club that play that key role in determining what a culture looks like. And we've talked a lot about coaches, but we're also really conscious of the role that people on a committee might play, and there's a lot that comes into that culture in terms of the behaviour that is within the club, the behaviour that's tolerated, the behaviour that's acceptable, and kind of the way that people do things within the club. So lots of that sits with those kind of leaders within the club, but it's also something that everybody within the club lives and breathes in terms of what a culture should look like. So absolutely, there's a role for policies and procedures in clubs that helps to set and reinforce culture. So there's that kind of paperwork side of things in terms of policies and procedures. But a lot of it is also behaviours. So that's where lots of this that we've been focusing on is behaviours, language, prevention, response, and giving people a really clear way of addressing incidents when they do occur.
Yeah, because I think that's a little bit of a fear, I suppose, of mine in particular, is that we do a lot of training of people and everyone says, yep, we completely agree. This is the direction we should be going in and this is what it should look like. Then they jump over the white line and all of a sudden all of that gets forgotten because they get super competitive. So it's trying to get people in a space where they can remember and reinforce what they've learned off the court, on the court, in those types of situations. I think that's going to be the biggest challenge for a lot of people is... not necessarily parking biases and those sorts of things, but it's just like this needs to be a lived behaviour 24/7. Yeah. This isn't just when I'm at a basketball court. This has to be something that's bigger, I suppose, societal.
Yeah, and I think one of the other points about culture is around, you know, who are the people around the table that are informing the decision-making? So if a club or an association is based in a really culturally diverse part of Victoria, ensuring that the people that are around the table that are informing decisions and potentially determining the strategy and the culture of that club or of that team have a role in decision making and informing that. So, you know, one of those key things that many sporting clubs are thinking about is how do they engage with the local community that is right outside their doorstep to ensure that what they're offering is reflective of the community that is in their area.
Yeah, definitely. And that is a really vital part of it as well. There is, I think every Saturday, even in the winter months, I drive past a cricket ground and see people playing cricket. I'm like, how have you managed to get a window where it's not raining in Melbourne in the winter months? But two, like, this isn't a competition, but it is literally just a community that gets together because they enjoy playing with each other. They feel safe. They feel welcomed. They play with a lot of different types of people as well. Why wouldn't they? That's kind of the thing. Yeah. If that's where they feel safe and welcome, why wouldn't they keep going back to that? So that's what we have to create everywhere. So they have options as well. They don't have to only have that in their lives. They could potentially play that still in winter, but play with another team in summer months. So it is interesting as to what that actually looks like everywhere.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, the way that sport is offered is always changing and needing to adapt to different trends. So there's always going to be a place for structured, competitive, organised sport, and that's such a key beneficial thing for people to do. In this case, it might be people training twice a week and playing basketball on a Saturday morning. Like, that's such a great thing for people to do. But, you know, part of providing inclusive sport for everybody is about ensuring that there's other options for people. So for some people, that might be 3-on-3. For other people, that might be playing basketball on the weekend with their mates. For other people, it might be a different thing. But regardless, there's all those opportunities along the pathway for people to participate where we can ensure that people are having a good experience, and having that good experience keeps people in sport, it keeps people in basketball, and keeps people getting those health and wellbeing benefits as well.
Yep. And credit to everyone involved in the program, because I have got a couple of emails since signing up to it, and every time it's like, oh, I've never really thought of it from that perspective. They haven't been spammy emails where it's like, yeah, okay, this is just an email to get an email. There's actually been really useful resources within that, which I think are valuable. And one of the ones was the use of food at sessions and making sure that it caters to everybody in that space. Like, can you just unpack that a little bit and what that impact has on the community?
Yeah, so food is one of those great examples of something that a club can think about. It's one of those things that naturally brings people together. It's one of those things that sporting clubs offer. Before we were talking about how clubs can kind of listen to their community to understand what their needs might be. And for some people, it might be that the food that the canteen or the food that the club offers doesn't meet cultural requirements or cultural preferences for people. So one of those things that is accessible through Set the Standard and also other resources that are out there is just supporting people to understand things like halal food, things like kosher food, and there's other examples as well that the club can offer, which means naturally people that come into that club to play basketball, when they go to get a bite to eat, have something that is accommodating of them.
Yeah.
I think that's one example, food. There's other examples as well in terms of uniform requirements, thinking about what uniforms look like for people, thinking more creatively and innovatively about uniforms so that people, because of cultural requirements and cultural beliefs, uniforms is not a barrier to them participating in basketball either.
Yep. I'll circle back to the food one because it's clearly a passion project of mine more than anything else. But it is amazing. You speak about making sure that everyone has something they can eat. That makes people stick around. Like, if that's after a training session, for an example, you all walk out, you survey the food, and it's like, hey, I'm not actually able to eat any of this. Instead of sticking around, they're more likely to leave. Whereas if it is something they can eat, they will stay, and all of a sudden they don't have much of a choice but to talk to other people and learn about it. Other people ask questions, why do you eat that? What does this look like? And all of a sudden that breaks down a lot of barriers for people.
Yep.
And it's one of the things that I recommend coaches do really early on in their season, actually, is just a little, whether it be a barbecue, whether it be at a restaurant, whether it be everyone brings a plate of something, whatever it might look like. Obviously check for everyone's preferences and potential allergies and all those sorts of things. But it just makes such a big difference, I think, to culture from the team. Like, it's just people forget that they're all basketball players and they just revert back to being people.
And it's a good point. And, like, thinking about it kind of proactively from the start is always going to make it easier than trying to respond and react. So, you know, understanding from potentially the start of the season about what that could look like, what could be offered, and what's going to create the best chance of people hanging around, that supports that sense of being a welcoming club, a place where people belong, a place where people can be themselves, but absolutely a place where people can get to understand and know their teammates and families get to know each other, all leading to that safe environment where people feel like it's a place for them and also a place that they belong and also a place that they want to keep coming back to. So food is one example. There's a whole range of other examples, and I think for every club, it's a matter of thinking about what are the changes that they can make in a kind of logical, sequential way. Again, that point about small changes over time leading to a bigger change as well.
Yep. And I think it's a case of nobody's really looking for a leg up out of any of this. They don't want to be favoured and everything catered towards them. They just want to be considered. And that goes such a long way to building team morale. It goes belonging within a community space more than anything else. It's amazing how quickly just a question will change everything.
Yep.
And it's like, look, you know, I do or don't eat this, but I appreciate you asking. Like, even if you can't facilitate that for whatever, I just appreciate that you've considered it in that space. And it's amazing how often that first question or that first consideration leads to two or three others that come down the road. And all of a sudden, you've got a really great two-way relationship where you can talk very openly about what they might experience, what they go through, and how you can help facilitate that as best as possible. So I think the more communication around that, the better. It's going to make, like, if you're a parent, I'll role play this out, but if you're a parent and you know that your child has been asked those questions at a training session, you would sit there and go, why would I want to leave this? This is fantastic. Like, they feel a sense of belonging. They're happy. They're engaged with what's going on. Even if they get to that point where it's like, oh, I'm not really too sure if I want to keep trying to play at the higher level or anything like that, okay,
yep,
that's fine. You don't have to. But do you really want to leave the sport? Because this is a really safe, welcoming, challenging environment that makes you happy.
Yep.
And that's the goal, I think.
Yeah. And like, sport is one place that people are spending their, you know, spending their time. But, you know, people are also spending their times in schools and in workplaces and in other settings where they might be having a great experience, and people will be kind of looking for that same great experience in sport. So there's those things that clubs can do, which is about ensuring they're a positive, inclusive place. And then that includes thinking about those considerations so that people are comfortable and having a great time. There's those other things as well, which then are about how do you prevent racism from occurring, and also when racism does occur, having the policies, the procedures, the approaches, having knowledge around the committee table and knowledge about what coaches can do to respond. Potentially that's responding in the moment, but also responding subsequently as well. So all of these things are about the role that those club leaders play. We know they're doing a lot of work to get people on the court week in, week out. But also about how do we support them as a sector, and how do we support them as a public health and health promotion agency through that work.
Yep. And it's why I love the name Set the Standard. That we hear it all the time in coaching, you know, the standard you walk past is the standard you accept.
Yep.
And I think it rings true in this space as well. Coaches are leaders. Whether you feel like it or not is kind of irrelevant. You are a leader. Kids will look forward to that game every single week, whether you know it or not. Like, it's one of those things that just lives rent-free in their mind, it feels like, that almost from Wednesday onwards, they're thinking about their Saturday game. It's going to be a big part of what they go through. So I love the naming around it. I suppose I'm curious, how in 10 years' time, what will this look like if it's all worked and everyone has genuinely made that commitment to move forward in the right direction? What do you envisage community sport looking like there?
So, yeah, it's a great question. So I guess in 10 years' time, it's about ensuring that people feel welcome, feel seen within their clubs, are having those great experiences. Coaches have the tools and resources that they need to respond to racism when it occurs, and club leaders have the tools and resources that they need to set their clubs up for success. But always, I think there's going to be an ongoing focus across Victoria about sport being the best it can be in terms of inclusion and celebrating and acknowledging diversity across Victoria. And we really want sport to be able to provide that to all Victorians, regardless of their background. So we really want people to be able to go into the sport clubs, be who they are, have a great time, continue participating, and again, enjoy those health and wellbeing benefits that come from it.
Yeah, really like it. Hey, just before we wrap up on this one, is there anything we haven't spoken about today that we probably should have?
One other thing to mention is on the Set the Standard website, people can indicate interest in some anti-racism training that is on offer. So we did talk about the role of training before, and training can be one of those key things that supports knowledge, awareness, understanding and learning. And there's that saying that the great coach never stops learning. So we've partnered with an organisation called Reflect Forward who run training, and that training is available entirely subsidised through the Set the Standard campaign. So that's one of the things that we would encourage coaches to think about, is having a look at the training offering, indicating their interest, and see if that's right for them.
Yep, absolutely. So anyone looking for more information, honestly, just Google Set the Standard. It'll come up straight away. And there is a mountain of resources on there that will either make you better, just straight off the bat, or at least cause a reason to think. And I think that's what we really want to do is check some behaviours and just make sure that we aren't part of the problem as coaches and we are part of the solution in this space. Whether you be a coach, whether you be a club leader, doesn't really matter. You have a level of responsibility, I feel like, with all of this. So, Matt, thank you very much for jumping in today. I really appreciate your time and just a little bit more clarity around what the program looks like and where it's going to be moving forward. And obviously, Sean, thank you very much for jumping in as well.
No worries, Rob. Thank you very much for having us and for the invite. And again, great to be working with Basketball Victoria. And in addition to people checking out the Set the Standard website, yeah, check out the Basketball Victoria video that was put out recently that talks about the Set the Standard. And it was great at the launch a couple of weeks ago to have Lauren Jackson there as one of our key campaign spokespeople talking about Set the Standard. And there's some material that includes Lauren Jackson as part of our campaign launch for people to see as well.
All right, so we've just heard from Matt Cameron from Vic Health and Set the Standard. So really fortunate on this time around to be joined by Niall Locke, who's currently playing for the Casey Cavaliers, newly signed to the Perth Lynx, of course, and is our Multicultural Diversity and Inclusion Officer at Basketball Victoria. Niall, welcome.
Thank you for having me, Rob.
It's brilliant to have you on here. So for those of you that may not know much about you to this point, can you give us the Niall Locke story as to how you've ended up here at Basketball Victoria and what your basketball journey has looked like to this point?
Yeah, cool. Yeah. So as Rob said, I'm Niall. I'm a professional athlete. Was playing for Southside Flyers last season, but now I have been recruited for Perth Lynx. I'm currently playing for Casey Cavaliers. But my basketball journey, I would say, didn't obviously start here at the top. It started with not even knowing the sport at all. So initially, from my background, coming from a South Sydney's household or an African background, soccer is usually the first sport that gets introduced because it's the most easily accessible. And then also there's a lot of representation in soccer alone that kind of inspires you to be a part of the sport. So I didn't know much about basketball. It wasn't until my classmates at school asked me if I could fill in for a teammate that was sick that day. And I said, I didn't really know how to play the sport, but they had decided like, well, you're sporty anyway. I'm sure we'll find a way to fit you in. And so I had decided to go and fill in for DSD Dolphins at the time at DBA at domestic. And so I didn't even think I was going to get subbed in at all. I thought, oh, they just needed the numbers. I'll just sit here and just watch them play and support them. And then I got subbed in and like was very athletic, running everybody out the gym kind of thing, but didn't really have much control or mechanics on the sport in general. And so I would run so fast, I would be given the ball and I would completely miss the layup and it's going back the other way. But the coach at the time saw potential and was like, it's fine. Like, I think we can work with this. We can work with your athleticism. And so how would you like to actually have a spot on the team and just join in? And like, we train every Wednesday. And so I was committed to that. And I was like, sure, I have nothing else to do at home. Like at 15 years old, I was like, I've never been a part of a club or program. Like, even though I played soccer, I often played it at lunchtimes or recesses at school rather than actually like going to an actual club organization. And so I started going every Wednesday and like just kind of started getting better. And I think there's a gem in like not necessarily having expectation on the sport. And so I feel like that's how my development basically happened, because I didn't have an expectation of the sport. I didn't necessarily have goals to play college or play rep basketball or now play professionally. Like, I didn't know what any of that stuff was. And so like the more I got better, the more people introduced new things to me, like, hey, do you want to go play rep basketball? And I was like, yeah, sure, like, what's that? It's the same thing but on like the weekends, and you travel, you go around Victoria to play. And I was like, oh, that's cool, I'll do that. And then so after that, it was like, hey, I think you should play college basketball. I was like, oh, what's that? And it's like, oh, you can go to the United States and like play. And I'm like, oh my God, I can leave the country? And they're like, yes. And I was like, oh, yeah, I would love to do that. And so once I played college basketball, then it was like, hey, I think you're good enough to like go play professionally. I was like, look, I think after college, I've kind of had enough of playing basketball. And they were like, no, like, we really think you should continue to pursue it. And at the time, I really didn't necessarily have the desire to play professionally. But after doing a play on initiative where I went back to my home country to distribute gear and equipment and be able to coach kids that were at a grassroots level, there was a lot of inspiration that came from that. And so I decided, hey, like, you know what, I need to keep playing. Like, I think I'm a great role model for a lot of these kids that look after me. And it's like, if I can't just kind of stop now when my body's still able to keep going, so maybe I should keep playing until, like, my body decides that it can't go anymore. And so that's how, you know, my professional career came about. And then now I'm going into my third year playing pro in the WNBL, so pretty cool.
Yeah, absolutely. And you are a long time retired, so don't retire until you have to retire. Once the body gives out, I'm still fairly confident you'd win the one-on-one competition at Basketball Victoria.
We've got a few hoopers in here.
We do have a few, but I feel like you've got them at this stage for sure. So what has basketball meant to you throughout? Because you sort of mentioned in there you didn't have expectations of it. So was it always just take it as it comes? Like, was that always just the mentality you had with it?
Yeah. For me, I would say basketball would be summed up to opportunity. Like, the doors just kept opening for different avenues. Like, the fact that I didn't know, like, you could get a free education through scholarship to play whilst playing basketball. So that alone, like, basketball brought that. All the people that I've met, like, the family, the friends that I've met throughout the world based off of just basketball alone, like, that's created social connection for me, a sense of belonging. Like, there's so many things that basketball itself has opened up that I always see. It's always beyond the game. It's always beyond just bouncing the ball for me. And so because of all those opportunities, because of, like, the burden, like, it's alleviated from my family, like, it's just, that's it. Like, it's opportunity for me, yeah.
Yep. Family, any interest in basketball before you played it? Like, it just wasn't something that kind of registered with them?
I think my brothers played, but their dominant sports was soccer and football.
Yep.
So they only kind of played basketball for fun as well, not anything serious. But I've always watched my brothers be sporty. And so for me, I've always, like, no, I want to come along. Like, I want to go to the park with you guys. And it's like, no, like, you're not supposed to come with us. And I'm like, no, I'm going. Like, I want to play. And so that's what, you know, has kind of created the pathway that I'm in right now of being competitive and, you know, playing with all that I have in me.
Yeah, awesome. And Zoe talks about it all the time, that she loves younger sisters that have got older brothers. Because it's like they're used to that sort of roughhousing around the house as well. They're used to the physicality. They're used to the competitiveness. There's just something about it that brings it out. And it is the family environment that really comes from that. I'm just curious more than anything else. Did you face any sort of roadblocks in going into organized sport, or was it just something you enjoyed playing with your family more than anything else?
Yeah, no, for sure. There was a lot of roadblocks that I've kind of bumped into. But for me, it was, again, the opportunity that my head was kind of screwed on, in that sense of, like, I had a vision because of the fact that doors were open. There was something in me that kind of kept me in the game. And so there was roadblocks in the sense of, like, I didn't fit in straight away when I played. Like, when I first started playing rep basketball, I wasn't good enough necessarily to even play many minutes. I was also encouraged maybe to play in the twos or the threes, but part of me wanted to grow and learn from people who were the best, and that was the ones. And so I decided to, like, put my foot down, and that's a lot of part of who I am, my personality in a way. And I was like, no, I'm going to learn. And, like, even if I have to sit on the bench for however long, like, I want to learn from the best. And so that allowed me to kind of work hard and then eventually get to that starting spot. But it wasn't natural for going into organized sports, especially when it's dominated by Caucasians. It wasn't easy to kind of just come in and be accepted. It's like you had to earn that acceptance. And, like, that's what I feel like was the most difficult part. And a lot of people didn't understand my upbringing. And a lot of people from diverse backgrounds are often parentified at a young age. And so I was doing things that adults would be doing at 8 years old. And so I was cooking, I was cleaning, I was walking my siblings to school. Like, I was dealing with paperwork. I was helping my mom at Centrelink. I was helping her with bank accounts. Like, I was doing a lot of things. I was, like, an interpreter. So there's, like, all these things that I was doing at such a young age that when I was into those spaces, I was a lot mature than a lot of people. But at the same time, they didn't necessarily understand the lifestyle that I came from. And so I felt like there was always a disconnect a little bit in, like, how we understood each other, because nobody asked the questions. And at the same time, I didn't feel confident enough. I didn't have enough trust in the people that were around me at the time to be able to open up about those things. And so if no one showed interest, I wouldn't bring it up in the first place. And so those are areas that I felt like I struggled with a lot. And like when they would do, like Rep Basketball does a lot of initiatives of like when they would do a money pool to buy a gift at the end of the season. Like I couldn't do that because my parents had other priorities that they were thinking about. It was really hard for me to ask my mum for $20 or $25 to put in a jar every week. Like, and at the same time, like when it came to team sheets or family scoring, like my family didn't have the capacity to be able to do that. So you are always kind of looked at as the outcast because of the fact that you're not doing what other families are doing. But at the same time, it's like, they didn't understand the privilege that they had and they didn't understand that their parents did what they could to then allow the kids to be kids. And so that's not necessarily the situation that I was in. And so it wasn't until I got older and I got better when people would suggest, hey, like we can pick you up or we can help you with this. And so initially that wasn't the case. People didn't realize I was taking the bus, the train to get to training. And then after training, when training finished at like 9 o'clock at night, I was doing the same thing. I was walking, waiting for the bus. I would get home at like 11 o'clock and I had school the next day. And so, and there was times where the train station was so far from my own home and I'm walking like 45 minutes to an hour just to get from the train station because the bus was taking too long. So I would end up walking in the dark to get to my home. And it's like those stories, like I don't haven't necessarily talked about very often, but like those are things that I experience. And oftentimes like other people don't see that, that you go through stuff like that.
Yeah. It's fascinating. You mentioned a lot of that. And I think back on my coaching in particular, and there are times where coaching is a lot of ignorance, I think, on my end too. And it's like, look, I need to be there at 9 o'clock for this training session. I'll be there at 9 o'clock for this training session. And I don't pay a lot of attention to the logistics, I suppose, behind the scenes that go in. And I mean, every person has a unique story. That's not everyone is dealing with the same things. And that's, we always talk about it, you know, be kind because you don't know what other people are potentially going through in this space as well. So it is, it's a challenge, I think, regardless for all coaches. To get to know your players. And just, it doesn't take a huge amount of effort, I don't think. Just a little bit of an understanding, even if you were to put together, like, what, again, I'll put you on the spot without any notice on this one, apologies. What were three questions that could have been asked of you, I suppose, as you were growing up, that could have actually made this a lot easier for you when you think about it?
I actually did have a youth league coach that was very helpful. Like, he went out of his way to assist with picking me up to ensure that I got to trainings, and like he almost became a second father to me because he always made sure I was good. And like I would say probably he played a pivotal role in how my success worked out because of the fact that like he would make sure, hey, like, do you have a ride, like what's going on? Like sometimes I would feel ashamed to have to go and ask him because I'm like, oh, I wish my parents could do what the other kids' parents would do, but obviously my parents weren't in that situation. But like the fact that he went out of his way to be like, hey, Naya, like, I'm going to pick you up at this time. Make sure you're ready. I'm going to drop you home at this time. We have these events that are going on. Like, he always made it a point to inform me about what was going on. And he didn't necessarily have to, like, know my whole situation of what was happening in the home. I think it's just based off of who he was as a person. It was just something that naturally came to him that he went out of his way to help. And there's a lot of coaches out there that have done that. And, like, kids have gotten amazing opportunities from that alone.
Yeah, that's really important. And it is. It's just sometimes it's a really flippant conversation you have. You just, it doesn't have to be a sit down and really unpack everything. It could just be a, hey, you got a ride? Yep, cool. No worries. Hey, you know where we're playing this week? Yep, you got that done. Yeah, no worries. Hey, you got any problems getting to practice? Or, you know, can we link you in with someone else that lives in the same direction as you that can at least get you halfway there or those sorts of
things? Even simple things as uniforms. Like there was a time when I did finally get the opportunity to play and the parents had decided to get me some gear for the junior classic when I played at the time. And that alone was like, oh, they knew like I didn't have the same shirt as every other kid that like got to pay for the shirt. And like it, they bought me the shirt, the socks, like those acts of kindness, like brought, you know, great. I started to feel a sense of belonging slowly, but that's what I'm saying. It doesn't always have, like, you don't have to wait till a player is actually good to be able to show acts of kindness. Like, at the end of the day, we're human. And when you show those acts of kindness, like the opportunities that you open up for other people or, like, the things that could happen in your life, like, the blessings that could come along with it, like, are endless. And it's, like, do what you would want someone else to do for your kid. And it's like, go out of your way. If you do have the ability to do it, I would say go out of your way to do it. And it's like simple questions of asking about merchandise or like uniforms. Like uniforms aren't cheap. Like especially how rep basketball is just getting more and more expensive. Yep. Like there's not a lot of parents have, especially people from diverse backgrounds. Like I'm a child of eight. So like imagine my mom paying rep basketball for every single one of us. Like she wouldn't have any finances to be able to live in everyday life. Like, so it's like obviously they've had to have other priorities that they have to look at before they look at what you would so call a hobby.
Yep.
And so like even that alone, like the club putting together stuff to allow people from different backgrounds or even just it could be kids that might not be financially able to in general. It doesn't necessarily have to be from someone from a diverse background, but like helping them in those instances, it like changes the whole game for people. Yeah,
it does. And what a brilliant lesson as well for other kids to see. Like if they can see adults model that behavior and what this looks like, whether it be empathy, understanding, anywhere else and anything else in between, that straight away builds that sense of belonging. Mm-hmm. I think that so many people are searching for. And it doesn't matter what background you're coming from. It is genuinely a case of everyone wants to feel accepted in some capacity. And if they can be accepted in something they also love, well, what better connection are you going to have with your community? Exactly. I think in that space. So I think you bang on. Mm-hmm. Like it's the ability to ask questions, to just unpack some things. I think that goes a really long way with just people starting to feel it because you probably grew up quite quickly. Yeah. Like as you sort of, you know, you've been doing adult things since you were 8 years old and that puts you in a different mental space, I feel like, than the average child that comes through that's, you know, not even necessarily a privileged life but just doesn't have to think about that.
Yep.
In that world. So it's such a different capacity.
Even at this age, I've had teammates that have like haven't realized how much I've had to think about that they haven't had to think about. And I'm like, I'm thinking about mortgages. I'm thinking about how my family is situated for the future. And a lot of the times it's like your parents have done the work for you, which is like kudos to them. And it's a great thing that they've taken that initiative. But for me, it's like I have to break those generational curses to be able to then have a life similar to yours where my kids don't have to go through that again. Yep. And so like that effort takes a lot. Like it's a lot of effort to build something for yourself, for your family and for your future family that it's not easy. It's exhausting. And like then you have to go and deal with other issues of people necessarily being ignorant or not knowing in general. And I don't say ignorant in a way where it's like in a mean or like a sat, like a, in that type of way. I mean it more so in the fact of like you don't know, but it is still your responsibility to go out there and learn.
Yep. And we'll put the basketball lens on this as well. Mm. And then we're asking you to make a jump shot.
Yeah.
Like with all this other stuff going on in the background, we're also asking you to perform when it matters. And that is a lot. Like that is a genuine burden that the kids, and I stress that enough, kids are being tasked with. That is so much.
Yeah.
And that's where I think a lot of the set the standard stuff comes into its own, is that just raising awareness more than anything else. It's no one's expecting everything to just flip over and everything to be great tomorrow. But what we are expecting is that you do show a little bit of understanding as to what this can look like, a bit of understanding as to who's in your circle, whose circle you can make better.
Yep.
By just asking the right question, by asking you know, or just making sure that they're along for the ride with you, I think just makes such a massive difference. So,
or even just asking why, like why aren't they doing something that every other kid or every other family is doing?
Yep.
Like I've had to deal with a lot of families or people that have had frustrations and probably rightfully so, but where they don't want to ask the question why and they don't want to have to actually confront the issue, but they want to create assumptions of, oh, this kid's not good, like they're too difficult to deal with, like none of their family ever comes to score, like why does every other family have to do it? And you just get into this realm of constant complaining, but no one actually addresses, like, but why aren't they doing it? If they had the capability to do it, wouldn't they do it? And so it's like, we don't want to kind of look from a place of sympathy or empathy, like we're going straight into assumptions and frustration rather than actually seeing why. And I feel like the why could just break the ice completely and help you to see a whole nother side of that kid.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think you bang on there, because I think back to when I was coaching, I think it was an under-12 team at the time, and similar to any tournament that goes on, it's almost like, look, you know, we've got a game at 10 o'clock, we've got a game at 3 o'clock, it's not really worth going home in between, let's just go somewhere and we'll all get a bite to eat as a team. And it's like, yeah, but can everyone afford to?
Yeah.
Like, and that's a genuine thing.
Question,
like
yeah.
it's something that a lot of people don't actually think about.
That mess,
yeah. And it got to a point where it's like, we're not going out to eat, but we will go back to someone's house and we'll have a barbecue or whatever it might be in between.
Yep.
And it's like that was kind of the middle ground of saying, look, without coming out and saying, I know you can't afford this meal, so we're not going to do this. It's like, look, let's just pivot a little bit. We'll still find a way to do what we want to do, but let's just make it a little bit more open to everyone else to be involved in that space.
Exactly. And that's so important because oftentimes a lot of kids from diverse backgrounds will just stay silent and they will not say, I actually can't afford this because of the fact of the guilt and the shame that comes with that because they're kids. They don't necessarily understand what their parents are going through or how even the economy works, how money works. Like they have no clue what's going on.
I still have no clue, to be honest. No, I'm awful with it.
Yeah, a lot of adults don't either. So it's like expecting a kid to be like, oh, like, I can't come. And it's like if they don't have the confidence to be even able to say that, they're just going to go silent and not even, oh, no, it's fine. Like I'm full. Like even if they're not full, they're going to lie to make sure that like they're not put in that uncomfortable situation where they feel like they're burdening another family based off of their own issues at home.
Yeah, I really like that. I'm curious. So when we talk about better engaging our core communities in general, how can people start in that space? Because it would be ignorant of us to sit here and say every community looks the same. Like there will be people of diverse backgrounds, whether it be from different countries, religions, whatever it might be. There will be a lot of diversity out there. We're probably not engaging super well as a sport. Mm-hmm. What if you were looking at an association, what would be the first step to getting down the road with this?
Yeah. So I feel like we make an analogy all the time of if your shopping center is very diverse but your organization's not, then you probably have to ask the question, why is that not happening? And like, do people within that area even know that there's a club there? And that's, you could start with that of like how registration is advertised. Like there's a lot of people, even older people that aren't really, may not be up to par with technology. And they might not have the assistance to be able to do it. There's a lot of families that need an interpreter to be able to do registration. And it's all about word of mouth connection. And I feel like even if just going back to the old fashioned way of printing out flyers to hand out to neighbors and families like within that neighborhood of like, hey, we have registrations for basketball. Let them know what's going on in the neighborhood. Hey, we have a sausage sizzle that we're doing in preseason. Come get to know us. Like that is just showing welcoming. There's a lot of things like with food, music, that's kind of like a universal language that brings people together. It's simple things like that, like a barbecue, a sausage sizzle. That's the same thing, barbecue, sausage sizzle.
No, like either just, way. My ears are pricked up either way, yes. So we're good there.
So then like that naturally allows people to step in and be like, oh, you guys are inviting us in. And oftentimes that is a cultural concept in most people from diverse backgrounds. We come from a lot of collective culture where you make a decision as a family, your friendships matter, like coming together to share meal matters. Like, so maybe just replicating that. And I understand a lot of Australia the Western world in general is individualistic culture, but what about changing? And that's why a lot of people feel a sense of belonging when they come to a team setting because of that collective nature of like, we're coming here as a family, as a team to be able to work towards some common goal. And so like, if we actually reach our hand halfway rather than expecting people from diverse backgrounds to constantly assimilate. They're already assimilated when they first came to the country in the first place. They're already accepting the institutions that are around them. They have to shift and change to fit the categories that other people have imposed on them. So why don't you reach your hand out and be like, hey, like this is an open space. We welcome you guys here. We want you to be here. And we want to learn from you guys and your background. Like, I feel like that alone of just creating something that's a universal language already breaks the ice. Like, you don't have to feel uncomfortable. Like, most people are going to come for food. When I hear about food, I'm ready to be there.
Yep. No, I'm very much with you on that one. It's amazing how many sporting clubs have started around that as well. And, like, I'm thinking it was only because I was watching a documentary on Ange Postecoglou a little while ago now. Football coach that comes from a Greek background and, you know, and same deal, emigrated out here and all those sorts of things, was involved with South Melbourne Football Club.
Yep.
But it had very little to do with the football and it had everything to do with on match day, which was Sundays, everyone would go to church in the morning. That was their thing. Then they go to the football in the afternoon, and it was. They'd have the, you know, the Euro sort of cooking in the background. People would watch the football, but that's not what actually brought the community
together.
Yep. Like, it was just a part of it. Yep. And I think that that is a big part. Like, if you're doing this with the mentality of, I'm going to get a better basketball out of it, you're doing it for the wrong reason.
Yeah, exactly. And
that's the big part. I really want to impress that you might. Yep. Like, I'm not saying it won't happen. You might. But that shouldn't be the main driver.
Yeah. Like, and I think we need to come back to the core of our organizations. Like, it's mainly community driven. It's mainly driven by volunteers. It's mainly driven by families. Like, these are things that I feel like we're starting to slowly get away from because we're so focused on the basketball. We're so focused on the wins and losses. We're so focused on getting championships. And it's like we're losing the core of what actually keeps clubs afloat is actually the community that's outside. It's the fans that you bring in. It's the way players interact with those fans, with the kids, like them being able to see role models. Like, there's a whole chain of things that happen prior to the basketball alone that, like, in general, funding often comes from communities. And so, like, even in the WNBL, we often have to make it a point to go out there and reach out to those families in order for our club to keep running.
Yep. It is one of those things, and you're absolutely right, because a lot of people probably don't consider that, like, the work that goes on behind the scenes. I mean, we're only, what, maybe a few weeks removed from, like, National Volunteer Week.
Yep.
But without volunteers, our sport literally does come to a screeching halt.
Yep.
And as with most things volunteering, a lot falls on a few. But we need to try and diversify that out a little bit more. And it's like, well, can we just give more people just a little bit?
Yep.
And that will keep them around it a little bit longer. And it happens so often that, you know, you might have someone from one background or community that comes in, but all of a sudden you get one and you've got four.
Yep.
And amazing how that just spreads out over the course.
Exactly.
And trying to engage them is so complicated.
Yep.
Like, it's also not. Yep. At the same, like, there's almost this fear of, I don't want to engage in case I say the wrong thing, I do the wrong thing, or I push people further away from me.
Yep.
But that's probably not the case in most situations.
No, it's not. And if you look at clubs like Casey, like, you go in there and it's so diverse based off of how Cranbourne itself, the area, Berwick, all that whole area is so diverse. And so the wider community is reflected in that association. And even if you go out of your way to ask people in that organization, how did they come about? Like, you can go, a lot of coaches are connected, a lot of admin are connected, they come to trainings, they go to, so there's always a meeting point. And even if it's just going out of your way to ask clubs like that, how do you run your association with all these diverse cultures? How do you ensure that they feel welcome and inclusive? We have Sharon Milner in Broadmeadows area who ran a Muslims only closed, well, Muslim only females closed gym because obviously their culture and their religion of not being able to participate in front of men. Yep. And so, like, once she ran that and then just decided one day to ask, would any of you guys like to help out and, like, be on the board and be outside of this? And how many hands went up? Like, that question alone of just asking, hey, would anyone like to help? We've talked about with me and Sheena about having a liaison, like, one person that has a different, like, that understands the language of certain people within that organization. And so, like, could that parent liaison bring other parents in and, like, parents that might not know English so well and, like, explain to them the process of registering, explain to them the process of how, like, scoring works and just sitting there watching their kids. Like, and it becomes like a social hub for parents to not always feel like they're putting it, because it's a lot of effort, like, with how much they pour into their kids within the sport. Like, if there's benefits that these parents can also gain from attending these games, like, you're going to find a higher volunteer rate. You're going to find more people who are actually looking forward to coming to these events every weekend. And, like, you're going to not be scrambling for positions to be filled.
I couldn't agree with you more in that space. And, I mean, Sharon Milner does a phenomenal job in general. Like, it's, and has been a long-standing, whether you call them Broadmeadows or Hume City.
Yeah.
Like, it's, you know, everyone you sort of talk to says something a bit different, but she's done a brilliant job out there over a number of years. And obviously, you know, ex-Opal comes with a fairly good basketball background, it'd be fair to say too, as you come into it. But if you are a coach and all of a sudden you look at your playing group, you've just been handed a team at the start of the season, what are maybe some of the activities they could do as a group to have a more inclusive environment around them? Like, would that be everyone around in a circle, talk a little bit about where you've come from, why you played? Like, would they be the first starting point, do you think?
Yeah. I think, yeah, even the circle I feel like is so powerful. Like, we use that in everything. Like, when I went to college or even now as a pro, like, those things, like, someone already having the questions, and now we have the internet. Like, you can literally search it up and come up with 10 questions or even 5 questions that break the ice. And so we've done that even last season with the Southside Flyers, where we got to talk about struggles that we've had as basketball players. And like, that was brought to our attention by someone from an Indigenous background that did our painting for the season for Indigenous round. And when she brought that up, and like, you hear the stories that I on an everyday basis wouldn't have known. And people were opening up about their lives. Like, it made me feel so much closer to my teammates, because I'm like, wow, like, you're struggling in a different avenue, and but you're still showing up every single day. I'm struggling from this avenue. Like, there's a shared understanding that allows people to just be closer. And you would be amazed of the success that you could have from the fact that there's a shared understanding. In basketball in general, you have to have trust. And when you can find ways to have a trust circle where there's like, I know you understand where I'm coming from and I understand where you're coming from, like, the possibilities of the things that you guys can achieve are endless.
Oh, phenomenal. And it's, I think it's one of my all-time favorite quotes, is the shared adversity builds resilience.
Yeah.
And it really is. And it's that connection that comes with it, of just a little bit of an awareness, as once we step off the court,
yeah,
what do they go through? Mm-hmm. And is it something completely different to me? Or is there some commonality there? It's like, actually, I might be able to help you with that. Yeah. Or I've been through this before, I can give you some assistance here.
Yeah.
But it's amazing how much that connection will matter. And, you know, we all know what little kids are like. They know nothing. They just run around like lunatics, mm-hmm. and, you know, they're excitable about everything.
Yeah.
I think the earlier we can expose them to that understanding of other people from different cultures and backgrounds and diversity, the better they're going to be for it. It's, if we wait too long, it becomes so much harder.
Yeah, and it's the simple things. There's not like a huge plan, a huge blueprint that you have to create in order to, like, you don't have to reinvent the wheel. Like, these things are already out there for you to be able to utilize. And so, again, the circle of trust. You could also do things where it's like a Q&A, do you really know your teammates? Like, you can make it fun. Like, there's things, bonding activities that allow the club to become more bonded regardless. And oftentimes I feel like we can also like assume people are from certain backgrounds, yeah, based off of their color of their skin. But you could have someone who is Caucasian, you can assume that they're Australian, but they could be German, or they could be Dutch, or they could be from any other culture that they might not actually speak English as their first language. It could be something completely different. They grew up differently. And so, like, just getting rid of those assumptions and actually going out of your way to ask people.
Yeah, and it's funny. I was talking to a coach about it not too long ago, and just about all this sort of stuff, like team bonding and cohesiveness and all those sorts of things. And their comment was, look, I'd love to do it, but I don't want to waste a training session. And it's like, it's not a waste.
It's not
like,
a waste.
It's not a waste. Like, you have no idea the power that will come into this group,
mm-hmm.
once they all understand each other better. Like, just let your club know, hey, we're not using the court this week, so they can give it to someone else.
Yep.
Like, just do it off court somewhere and just unpack it a little bit. And I think as a coach, be a little bit vulnerable in that as well.
Yep.
And say, look, I don't have all the answers. Mm-hmm. Like, if you don't, yep. don't lie, obviously. But, you know, if you don't have all the answers, you know, don't make it up.
No.
But endeavour to try and unpack that a little bit as well, and,
exactly.
and just find out, because that connection piece is just massive.
It is. And it's like, there's all the championship teams, if you even go and like search deep and research it, it's the same stuff. They're doing bonding. Like, there's no great team that has succeeded without like, oh, we just show up to training and like, that's it. Like, all we've done is train. Like, no, there's a sense of connection. Like, in the WNBL, we are constantly pushed or encouraged to make connections outside, to go for lunch or to attend a golf course together. Like, there are leaders in our groups that take that initiative. Like, this past season, we went to Kayla George's house and we did painting and we had discussions. Like, her husband cooked for us, and then now we got to see how Kayla lives. And it's like, stuff like that just open up, like, oh, wow, like, this is not just basketball, Kayla, or this is not just basketball, Naya, but like, they have real lives outside of this.
Yeah, and you're absolutely correct with that, because you just don't know.
Mm-mm.
there's an assumption that because you've got an 8:20 game, everyone will just be there at 8:20, and you've got to figure out how to get there and how to get home from it, and you've got to make sure that you play as well as you possibly can in that time too.
Yep.
And let's face it, nobody wants to play poorly, but if you're carrying some baggage, of course, that's just one more thing that you're going to have to try and unpack,
yep.
I suppose, to perform in that exactly. space. And you know, we do have the two different streams, obviously. The domestic play for fun stream, where you could probably just turn up and yep. play and you'd be fine. Mm-hmm. But as you start to move up levels, mm-hmm. there is a little bit of pressure to perform.
Yep.
And, you know, how many people are used to that?
Yep.
Like, I'm thinking back to when we were talking at the start, like, how many times would your family have seen you play when you were younger?
Mm-hmm.
Like, it has to have been few and far between.
Yep. Yep.
So, yeah, like, yep. that's a genuine thing that people go through. And it's like, if you were to walk in the door, and I'm not saying this happened to you, but if you were to walk in the door, they may not really care how it went, because life has to move on.
Exactly.
Like, so quickly in that yep. sort of space. So, yeah, it is such an interesting area to unpack.
And yeah. oftentimes those parents are going through their own battles. And so, yep. like, if I didn't, like, constantly encourage my family to come and watch my games, like, as I've gotten older, like, my mom kind of, like, looked at us as, like, we're kind of like our own individuals. We seem to know what we're doing. And so, like, she hasn't necessarily been like, hey, like, can I come to your game? It was more so, hey, mom, like, can you come to my game? And she feels like, she goes, of course, yeah, I'll come. And so she comes to those games now. And it's like, I still to this day still have to ask her, like, hey, mom, will you come? And she goes, oh, yeah, I'll come. And it's like, sometimes you have to reach out there, like, yep. olive branch to be like, come, I want you to be there. And for the parents to be like, oh, my God, my child still needs me, even at an older age.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. And it links directly back to how do you engage those communities in the first place. Mm-hmm. Like, that's exactly what we have to be doing. And I think basketball would be better for that, I think, in the diversity in general. But society will be better. The communities will be better for it as well. I think the more people can work together and experience different backgrounds, mm-hmm. the better it's going to be.
It is. And, like, we had Nathan from Western Port, where he had reached out to me for a situation that had happened from someone from a diverse background, and he didn't necessarily know how to address it, because he's like, you know, when I used to be at Knox, it was like, it was just a given. Like, we had diversity come into our doors all the time, that, like, it was like natural. Like, we knew the players. We didn't have to necessarily put in extra work to know the players. We just knew, hey, like, that's Bill from here. That's like, it was like a family that we knew. And that, like, now that he had to, you know, he's moved on to Western Port, there's been a different situation. And, like, just him alone, like, reaching out to me, or as coaches, like, I would encourage, if you know someone, or you've gone to a workshop, or you've heard them talk about cultural diversity or cultural safety, like, even just going out there to ask extra questions out of your ignorance, like, that breaks the ice so much. And I was able to explain to Nathan that a lot of the times, even when you're a female from a diverse background, again, you're parentified, you might have to stay home with the kids and be the babysitter whilst your age mates are out training, and you're too ashamed to even bring it up. And so you kind of go back to that, and you're like, and he's like, I didn't necessarily think about that. And I was like, how many siblings does she have? What cultural background is she from? Okay, she's South Sudanese, but what tribe specifically is she from? And, like, we have to go deeper into that stuff to then be able to unpack what the, you know, the broader topic is. Like, there's so much layers that go underneath why someone just doesn't show up to training, or why in the first place they've dropped out.
Yep. And it's funny, because, I mean, I can only speak to this because I've screwed it up. In all honesty, like, there was a kid missing from our practice for 3 weeks in a row, and, you know, you see their role start to change. It's like, well, if you're not training, you're not getting any better. Yep. You don't quite fit in now. And that almost, I didn't quite make them ostracized, but there was certainly didn't have that level of connection anymore.
Yep.
And they weren't coming to tell me why they weren't coming to practice, because, again, I think they felt intimidated, yep. by saying, I don't want to tell the coach why I'm not here.
Yeah.
And it was literally a case of I had to babysit my younger brother.
Yep. And they'll, like, think, oh, they won't understand.
No, we went the other way. It's like, we do understand. Yep. Bring the younger brother.
Bring him
we got no problems. Yeah. It's just an extra kid at practice. We have no issues.
All my nieces and nephews to the games, and everyone's like, oh, there's a family.
Yeah, exactly, like, right. Hey, everyone needs a rebounder.
Exactly.
And you know, that might be the right one.
Utilize them as rebounders. Exactly. For sure.
Exactly right. But I think that just, again, it comes from understanding. Ask the question. Try and unpack it as much as you possibly can. People don't, and you said it almost flippantly before we even started recording on this, people like talking about themselves.
Yep.
Like, people will happily explain something to you if you come in with the right approach.
Exactly.
You just don't come in with all fire and brimstone as to why aren't you at practice or anything like that. It's like, hey, is everything okay?
Yep.
Like, that's the first question you can ask anyone, is everything okay? Yep. And they say yes. It's like, cool. Well, I've noticed this.
Yep.
Is there anything we can do to help in that sort of capacity?
Yep.
But again, you just got to ask the question and just highlight it.
And earlier we also spoke about fear and how fear plays into that factor of like fearing that you might ask the wrong question. And it's like in the basketball world and sporting world in general, we are constantly preaching to kids that they need to be uncomfortable to be comfortable. And it's like you have to have those uncomfortable conversations. Like, what's the worst that you can hear? No, I'm offended by what you said. Like, communication in general is something that as humans we are like lacking a lot, and we're starting to move away from it more and more and more and more. And it's like that alone, again, breaks the ice, creates a conversation. Now you know what they're thinking. There's no more assumptions. It's there in plain sight, and now you can have that conversation. And it's like if you as an adult feel uncomfortable to talk to a kid about that, then it's like really hard to have expectations of them showing up and fixing those issues with their own parents.
Yep. That's exactly right. And, I mean, there are plenty of times as a coach where I've either made a statement or asked a question. I thought there were about 50 different ways I could have asked that, and I picked the one that was wrong. Mm-hmm. Like, it just, whether it be the tone, the body language, the delivery, whatever it might have been, it's just hit incorrectly, and you know straight away.
Yep.
And that's, you know, it's becoming more complex, I suppose, with kids are probably more used to conversing over text, which obviously we don't want to do from a child safety perspective, but... Mm-hmm. You know, are there ways that they can have someone else with them when you're talking to them? Like, is there a trusted friend that they have? Is there someone else from the family that can come? If mum and dad are working, is there someone else that's connected to the family somehow that can come and have that chat with you at the same time? Mm-hmm. Like, it's just expanding.
Yeah.
Like, ask more questions.
And when I was in college, there was a lot of things that were flaring up based of like how I grew up, and like it was affecting my performance and how I was playing. And it was really hard for me to put into words, like from a vocal standpoint of like what I was going through. And so one of my assistant coaches had encouraged me, hey, like write a letter, like write it down. We'll read it and we'll direct you with wherever we can send you. And that alone, like I was like, oh, I've never thought of like writing a letter. And so I did. And now it's like these coaches knew everything about me, what was going on. They knew exactly where to direct me. They knew how to assist me. And like that alone, again, the fact that I communicated it to them, whether it was verbally or written, like it helped them help me.
Yep.
And it also helped them understand next time, what do we do if another kid's in this situation?
Yeah, I really like that. So with the Set the Standard campaign, what changes can you see coming from this in the wider basketball community?
Yeah. So a lot of the times, like we talk about how like Set the Standard is a lifestyle choice. It's like an action. Anything to do with cultural safety, it's a verb. It's something that you're going to have to keep reflecting on. It's not about perfection. It's about progression. And so it's not necessarily telling you to completely flip your life upside down in order to set the standard. It's as simple as treat people the way you would want to be treated. And so that's like a primary school lesson that I think is so underrated, of the fact that you just need to treat people the way others would like to be treated. And so people want to feel seen. People want to feel heard. People want to feel a sense of belonging. And like even at BV, when we say basketball is everybody's game, and it's the same thing in associations, I'm sure those values are written big on the wall of how basketball in itself is everybody's game, then truly make it everybody's game. It's one thing to just say it, but it's another thing to action it. And so looking at Set the Standard more so as an action rather than something that we just slap on a piece of paper or say that we're putting it on the board and saying, oh, we're culturally diverse, but then it's actually not reflective in the way you guys talk to people or the way how you behave and like your own biases. Like that's when it's not as easy to just say it. It's like, it's all about doing. It's the action. It's constantly looking at yourself, looking at the biases that you might have in your own home and questioning yourself. And it's all about self-improvement. Yes, it can be fixed from an institutional level, but it all starts from as an individual into your family, then into your community. So, yeah.
Yeah, and it genuinely is, one person can make a massive difference in this space. Mm-hmm. And it's amazing. Even if it's not the words, even if it is the actions that people see and they go, oh, this person is on my side, or they are in my corner, or they are a person that I can trust and can go to if I need something in this sort of space. Mm-hmm. So I think it all makes a massive difference in that world.
And I always say, like, sometimes you can just flip it around and change it to try and understand it in a different lens of like, maybe if it's not race, it could be gender. Like, yep. For example, if you've mistaken a child who is female for a male and that you've hurt their feelings are valid. And yep. From there, you can learn from that situation. If you are body shaming people, that's something that's still wrong. It still hurts people. You still have to learn from it. It's the same thing. Like, if you're mistaking people for based off of the color of their skin or making assumptions on their behalf based off the color of their skin, it's just common sense of anything that's negative towards somebody else, even if you didn't intentionally mean for it to be intentional, if it's still hurt, you still have to take the responsibility and learn from that behavior.
No, I really like it. Is there anything we haven't hit on that we should have through this chat?
Yeah. So what can be done if like situations have actually occurred within an association when maybe you've heard racism? So you could step in when racist comments are made. You can check on a player that is struggling. You could create inclusive game day rituals. You could make new players feel welcome, and you can ensure every voice is heard. And it's simple things like that. Those four steps, you do one of them, in a year you would see your club change.
Yeah, really like it. No, thank you so much for jumping in. This has been a great chat. We'll have to get you back in at some various stages and go through some more basketball stuff. But yeah. Fantastic to have you assisting with this campaign, obviously in conjunction with Victoria Health as well. But
of course.
Looking forward to seeing you over in Perth this coming season.
Thank you for having me, Rob.
Coaches, thank you very much for the listen on this one. Hopefully there's a whole bunch of information that you can take out of that you can help apply to your club, your association, your community, the people that are around you. Hopefully it is something that resonates with you and can help you. And the Set the Standard campaign, like I said earlier in the pod, just Google that. There'll be a whole bunch of information and resources that are really valuable for you to help in this space and be better educated in what this can look like moving forward. So again, massive thanks to Matt and Naya for their time on this one. Coaches, that's us done for this week. We'll catch everyone again next week.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Talking Split Podcast. Make sure you like and comment on your favorite podcast platform. And don't forget to share and subscribe so that you never miss an episode.